Pippa Elias. She is just recently, well, not that recently, but finished graduate work at Virginia Tech, working with Stephen Schoenholtz, and now she's working with the Union of Concerned Scientists. So I'll turn it over to Pippa. Pippa's also one of the co-conveners of this, well, there's Dale Cole back there. How about that? Hi, Dale. she's also one of the co-conveners of this symposium.
Thanks, Mary Beth. I'm going to speak broadly about how to inform policy with science. So less about some of the important work that Carl does in terms of ensuring that our research is still funded, but more about communicating with policymakers at multiple levels. And I may use the term education and information and advocacy all interchangeably. I'm not talking about lobbying. I'm not talking about any political party. It's really just communicating with policymakers to ensure that policies are reflecting science accurately. And Tim Lenton, who is a climate scientist in the UK, explained in Nature this year why he thinks it's important to communicate science to policymakers. He said, "I don't want to write policies, but I do want to ensure that global efforts to tackle the climate problem are consistent with the latest science and that all useful policy avenues remain open." And this is a lot of the work that I do. Since graduating a few years ago, I've been representing the Union of Concerned Scientists at the UNFCCC, which is the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. This is Kyoto, the meeting that happened a couple years ago in Copenhagen, Cancun last year, and we meet 4 to 6 times a year and move very, very slowly, if at all, but slowly on climate issues. And I work specifically on forestry in developing countries and trying to reduce emissions from tropical deforestation. The Union of Concerned Scientists is a nonprofit organization. We don't take any government funds or any business funds. We're funded mostly by membership and a few big donor organizations. And I feel like going into this, which I've only been doing a few years, but I do have a lot of experience, and as Carl said, at this point I'm probably older than most staff members in Congress, which is a little frightening. Those pictures of blackberries are a little outdated. They all have the newest blackberries. But I feel like the education that I received as a forest soil scientist from most of the people in this room really prepared me to work on advocacy and inform policy with science because of the approach that we take to our research. So my working hypothesis is that forest soil scientists already have the skills needed to inform policymakers. So going from working on the ground, the skills we have that make us prepared for advocacy are listening, framing our scientific results in familiar terms, providing analyses on the effect of multiple reasonable scenarios, determining the suitability of options on the table, whether that's a management option or a policy option, and evaluating the economic, social, and long-term impacts of decisions. Again, it could be a management decision or a policy decision. So I'm going to use an example today of how these skills can be used at varying levels of government. I think that it's important to participate in varying levels of government because our science is applied differently, and I would say you lose a little bit of precision going to higher levels up to the international level, but in turn you gain possibly a larger impact, so balancing those two is important. Today I'm going to use a climate change example, but I think there are a lot of issues that we're talking about this week that could all be used: bioenergy, biochar, land use and land use change, and obviously climate change, which is what I work on, and that's why I'm going to use it as an example. So here are a couple of papers that were published in SSSAJ this year, and the essential take-home message that you could glean from these papers and want to explain to a policymaker is that reforestation generally leads to soil carbon accumulation. And this is something that most people in this room know. It's something that we've known for a long time, but we're still publishing on because there's always something new about it. And we understand that soil carbon accumulation is important for a variety of reasons, but these days it's easy to explain it in terms of climate change rather than maybe soil structure, which is a little more difficult to explain to policymakers. So I'm going to go through a few different levels of government and explain how you can get this message across using those five skills that I identified. So at the local level, how do you get policymakers to understand that reforestation generally leads to soil carbon accumulation, and therefore they might want to create a policy or a local plan around that? In terms of listening, the local level, community relationships are really important. This might be your community that you have to live with after all is said and done. And I also think the local planning level is a more iterative process. There are more opportunities to interact, so it's not always as important to make sure that at your one point of communication, you get your point across. This is a long-term process, long-term relationships. In terms of framing scientific results, the local level is where you have the option to be site-specific and location-based. So at the local level, you could say, you're going to get soil carbon accumulation, but it depends on past land use. It depends on soil type. And here's the opportunity to really do that. So the benefit of that is that when you're evaluating the effect of multiple scenarios, you can really practice adaptive management, and there's a lot more flexibility at the local level. What can be difficult in terms of analyzing the suitability of options is that there's going to be a lot of options at the table, on the table at the local level, so it might take a little more work to kind of filter out those that aren't suitable, aren't viable, and then allow policymakers or the local community to decide amongst the viable options which one they want to do. Economically and socially, you're obviously dealing with smaller budgets. And also at the local level, people who are involved with politics have a perception of a more direct impact between the policy and their lives. So again, these are people you're probably going to have to live with down the road, so that's an important thing to keep in mind. At the state level, I think listening and communication becomes more difficult because you're dealing with a broader population. Often it's urban and rural populations. They have different needs and different levels of education. So you have to kind of hear from them what their understanding is and then frame your message accordingly. I think what's exciting in terms of framing scientific results at the state level is that there's kind of the perfect balance between specificity and also the opportunity for big impacts. So a state may set a reforestation goal or a sequestration goal, and that can have a huge impact across the state, but the level of specificity might only go down to the county level in terms of what the policy says, although implementation is different. And similar with evaluating the effect of multiple scenarios, they're going to be broader, but it's still possible to have some specificity. I think what's difficult at the state level is that pre-existing legislation can often be limiting. At the state level, most of the legislators are people who have other full-time jobs. They're meeting for a few months out of the year, and they have a lot of work to do in that short time period, including passing a budget, which is often the most difficult thing that they do. So state laws don't move very quickly. Often once they're set, they're set, and it's hard to revisit them just because there's a lack of time. The economic, social, and long-term impacts, starting at the state level, terms of office really start to influence what gets done. Governors are often limited in their terms, and that's the time frame that they're looking at. And state politics can really matter, especially in climate change right now. California, New England, a couple Midwestern states have decided to kind of set their own state goals for climate change. So in that case, explaining the benefit of reforestation to carbon sequestration may be really useful. In other states, maybe Texas, climate change is a non-starter. And so in that case, you might want to explain the other benefits of reforestation that are not so much in terms of climate change. At the federal level, I would definitely turn to Carl in terms of listening to members of Congress and going with him or having him introduce you is going to establish credibility quickly, which is really important amongst members of Congress and their staff. You need to be very responsive. You need to be correct and admit if you don't know something. And in terms of listening to them, you need to be willing to listen between the lines. And that is what gets lobbyists in D.C. super excited, that they get to do that. And if you can be somewhat excited by it, it can be fun. But you have to kind of interpret what members of Congress and their staff are telling you and figure out what that means in terms of what they need from you. In terms of framing scientific results, I think this is something that other people would probably disagree with me on, but I think it's important to frame results in terms of what's politically viable and popular. I think it's honorable to go to a member of Congress or their staff and tell them, you know, what is right, because that's what, as people like to use the phrase science says, even though I don't think science talks, but people say science says this, we must do this. And while I think that ultimately, down the road, we want to get people to that mindset. If you really want to take action now and influence the policies that are on the table now, you need to frame your results in terms of what's viable, in terms of the conversation that's actually going on. So this Congress is not going to pass climate change legislation. It's unlikely that any Congress in the next few years is going to pass climate change legislation. So again, you might want to focus on the aspects of reforestation that are additional on top of just carbon sequestration, although to some member of Congress, you might want to mention that as well. You also need to be able to balance the broad effects of multiple scenarios, what this means nationally to each member of Congress's jurisdiction. They really ultimately only care about how it affects the people who are voting for them so they can go home and get reelected. Again, I think evaluating the suitability of options can be really difficult, and I think this is one of the most frustrating aspects of trying to inform policies with science. This is where you lose a lot of precision. You can't go into a lot of detail of when carbon accumulation happens and when it doesn't, depending on reforestation and depending on the species. You really need to look at the policy options that are on the table and determine, often relatively quickly, often in a matter of 2 hours, which one reflects the science the best, even if it's not 100%, and which one can you get behind because of that. So that's a challenge that each of us have to kind of personally grapple with, because it can become an ethical and moral challenge, but if you really want to influence policy, at some point you have to get behind an option on the table. As we all know, in terms of economic, social, and long-term impacts, every elected official is always running for re-election, and unfortunately that is the time frame in which they work. And again, all they care about is how results affect their local populations, who's voting for them, and obviously if you're someone who's voting in their district, you have a much stronger say, but I think scientists are very well respected on Capitol Hill. The Union of Concerned Scientists also takes people up to the Hill, as Carl does, and no matter what office you go to, the people we bring up to the Hill have always felt respected. Sometimes you don't always feel like they're listening to you because staffers are on their Blackberries, but they've never argued that, you know, their science is wrong or that they shouldn't be doing it. So It's important to speak with every member of Congress, even if they're not your representative. At the international level, which is mostly where I work, you're dealing with a huge range of interests and cultural differences, and also capacity. So at the climate negotiations, for example, the U.S. may send 30 to 50 staff, depending on how important they think the meeting is. A developing country gets 2 people paid for, and often that's all that they can send. So if you're talking about reforestation and carbon sequestration to a member of a developed country who works for the Ministry of Forestry, you're going to probably go into detail. You're going to have a fun, nerdy conversation. I love those. But if you're dealing with someone from a developing country, they might be from a finance ministry and very well suited to negotiate on behalf of their country, but with little to no understanding about forests. So you really have to start from the beginning. it's amazing how many people in the world of politics do not know the carbon cycle at all, and it's very easy to forget that not everyone knows that. And even other people working at NGOs, a lot of these people are political science majors, have a wonderful understanding of the democratic process, but not carbon. Framing scientific results, I think this is where you lose precision to sometimes a frustrating level, but you have to just give constant reminders of fundamental messages. Climate change is a problem we should deal with, and forests are part of the solution. When you're evaluating the effects of multiple scenarios, it's again similar to dealing with Congress, where you just have to deal with what's on the table and try to get that to be as good as it can be. At the international level, things move even more slowly than they do at the congressional scale, and so sometimes it'll take 2-3 years just to get two options on the table that countries can live with. So you're literally talking about selecting between two different words and figuring out which of those two different words is going to be better in terms of, you know, correct carbon accounting. What's exciting is that there's a broad range of implications. Potentially, a policy could influence every country and every type of ecosystem. So that's why we do that work. And in terms of economic, social, and long-term impacts, global politics are always going to be involved, but they're not always clear. So say at the climate negotiations, there are implications for trade, and that's not something that I am an expert in, nor will I ever be. So my way of dealing with this is by surrounding myself with other experts, with economists who I can depend on to evaluate the effects of a policy on trade, and they'll depend on me to understand the carbon cycle. So I'm going to end super quick. So there are days when dealing with politics is frustrating, and there are days when it can look really dark, but I just try to remember why I'm doing this work. So here's a harbor seal at a glacier that I recently visited that has retreated over a mile in the past few years. And an indigenous woman from Panama who has decided to take most of her land and do a reforestation project. And it was really great to meet with her and hear kind of why she's doing what she's doing. She really has her heart in the right place. She really wants to affect future generations. And so I try to remember that as I'm working on policies that will hopefully give her a financial incentive for doing taking the correct land management decisions. So I'll take a couple questions, but mostly I'm looking forward to discussion. So thank you.
So we do have time for a couple questions for PIPA, and there is also time for a discussion period after PIPA's questions. There are refreshments for a coffee break that back there. If you're dying for coffee at this particular moment, feel free to help yourself. Noise now, but anyway. Questions for PIPA? Do you interact with other societies, professional societies or scientific societies?
My organization does. We actually attend a lot of scientific societies and do this kind of explanation of how policy and science interact. So this year I'll be going to Society of American Foresters, and I went to Society of Ecological Restoration. We go to ESA and SSSA. And that's one of the things that the Union of Concerned Scientists does specifically, is try to bridge the gap between policy and science. And SSSA does it incredibly well, and they are a wonderful resource, though since they cover all sciences, sometimes they're a little overstretched, but I would definitely look into the work they do if you're interested in this, and obviously work with Carl as well.
Yeah. It seems that some of the discussions at that level have not quite understood the role that forests could contribute, and with respect to climate issues and things like that, it seems like there's been a long time to get there. Where would you suggest that this group might start to target input into those discussions?
Yeah, because sometimes the IPCC is
It's a very well-respected avenue, but one that doesn't always influence policy as closely as you would hope. I think what is especially important about SSSA and the work that we do is kind of the intersection, not just of forests, but of all land use. And I think down the road, that's going to be even more important. So the more work we can do to kind of get ahead of the curve in terms of the implications of policy land use decisions on viable land management options is going to be really important. And in terms of the international negotiations, I think that's coming down the road because of political reasons that I can try to quickly explain, which is that the Kyoto Protocol's commitment period is ending next year. And so there's opportunity either for utter collapse of the international climate negotiations, which obviously is not what any of us want, but there's also opportunity for a totally new regime that might actually bring the U.S. on board and is going to bring a lot of developing countries on board, where a lot of those land use decisions are going to have huge impacts.
Other questions for people? Is there consensus meetings? So what I mean by that is, if we want to have impact in a political arena, then we need to say in very clear messages, these are the top three things we as the scientific community believe would be helpful to you. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about the opportunity to meet, and maybe some of the other speakers can answer that. But in terms of how politically important it is for scientists to say, this is what we have consensus on and these are our top three issues, I think climate change is rather unique in the public's misunderstanding of the lack of consensus. I think in terms of other issues, and I think actually in most forestry issues, the public is much more comfortable understanding that there are various opinions and that there are implications based on ecosystems and kind of where you're working. So if it's going to be a huge effort for scientists to come up with a consensus, there are probably better uses of the time, I would argue. Although probably depending on the policymaker you're trying to influence, it would be different. At the international level, we're not dealing with that. No one who actually attends the climate negotiations thinks it's not happening. I mean, there's a little bit of an argument of whether we want to reach 2 degrees Celsius or 1.5, whether or not that's possible, whether or not there's actually science to relate parts per million to temperature change. But that is a uniquely American problem